Julie?
Yep.
This is our occasional, I'll stop short of saying regular, update from SPP. We had MISO this morning. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. It is December 12th, 2018. And I'm joined by Commissioners Brian Crashus and Julie Fedorchek, as well as Victor Shook and Jerry Lean at the table, SPP staff, and we should get your names and titles, which I don't know your titles.
Okay.
With SPP, so I'll let you do that. And did you have any opening?
I don't.
Commissioner?
I don't.
So whoever's going to take it away.
Okay.
And one thing, unlike our old microphones, which we always encourage people to get closer,
you don't
get closer.
To do that with
these. If you have them out here at the end of the table,
oh,
it's but in front of you, that's okay. When it comes through for the recording the best.
Hearing loud and clear, right? Okay. Thanks for having us back. I was telling Ben that I've probably been to Bismarck more than any place in our region since I joined SPP 6 years ago. I've probably been here 10 different times. I actually like coming, even though it's cold. I'm Sam Loudenslager, and I'm the Director of Regulatory Policy for the company. As I said, I've been with the company going on almost 7 years now. Ben, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Ben Bright. So I'm the manager of Ben Bright. I'm the manager of regulatory processes at SPP. Been there about 12 years.
So given the conversation that I heard this morning, I've kind of flipped up the order of the slides that you'll see up here. And I didn't have time to change the copies that I had made, so bear with me. So this is the agenda we've got together. Talk a little bit about wind in our region, not a lot. Go over some of our current statistics. Talk about what's going on with the holistic integrated tariff team project. And then just touch on, and I know Commissioner Fedorchek's familiar with it, what's going on with the RSC OMS liaison committee, I guess it's called. So
you gotta come up with a better name.
Well, I thought we named things poorly, and we do. Holistic Integrated Tariff Team.
That's the one I was going to compliment the whole team. I mean, when you can come up with a hit team, that is... somebody needs a bonus for that one.
Well,
next one's not so good.
I mean,
good.
That is just... so uninspiring. RSC-OMS Joint Task Force.
Well, it's actually worse than that. It's the SPP-RSC-OMS.
Yes, Liaison Committee or something.
All right, so we're going to start off with talking a little bit about wind. And if there's more information that you guys want to know, all you have to do is ask, and we'll make sure and bring it back. This is on your slide, or page 10 of your slides. This is the current wind and solar generation that's in our GIQ. You can see it's mostly settles around Kansas and Oklahoma and eastern New Mexico. But there's a little bit in North Dakota, too, up in the kind of the northwest, north central part of the state. And that's just reflects what's in our queue. Some pretty big projects out there. I know the queue is confusing, and everything you heard this morning about the MISO queue, you could probably copy and apply right to SPP. People can come in the queue as they want to come into the queue, as long as they pay whatever money is required for them to get into the queue. They get out of the queue when they want to get out of the queue. Once they get out of a study, you have to restudy everything that's left in. And so the process can take years.
What's your entry fee, Sam?
I don't know what it is off the top. It used to be like $5,000, but I don't know if that's what it is anymore.
Megawatt or just total?
Yeah, per megawatt. But they tried to increase that a few years ago. They've redone the queue process 3 times that I'm aware of. And nothing seems to really work. We tried to provide incentives for people to get out early, to never get in. And it's just not, we're backed up just like MISO is. We don't know what to say. We just finished an effort. We had a Generation Interconnect Improvement Task Force that finished its work this year, I think it was. But when you see the next page, you're going to see we've still got huge issues. So these are the pending GI requests. This is what they're made up of. We've got a little bit of fossil. I would imagine that's gas in the queue. But wind is about 54 gigs, and solar is about 20 gigs. And we actually starting to see a little bit of storage show up. Not much. I think there are a couple of storage projects, and those are typically associated with the solar projects. The solar is commercial grade that's in the queue. So,
do you have the constraints, the transmission constraints, the lack of availability on the existing system?
Sure. I mean, yeah, you do. With wind, what our operators will tell you, because we went through a process last year to see if there was some way that we could come up with a process to try to encourage exporting wind out of our region, mm-hmm. and it didn't go anywhere, because at the end of the day, somebody's going to have to pay for the transmission to move the wind, number one. Number two, our operator said, we don't need any more transmission out there to try to do that, because as soon as you build a new transmission line, it's going to be taken up by new generators there, so it'll never be able to serve to actually export.
Is there that much demand there?
Yeah. Yeah, and the market's limited, too, when you talk about exports. I mean, MISO and SPP are basically looking at the same kind of areas that they would export to, which is the southeast of the U.S., basically. We've got members, Southern companies, one of their subsidiaries is a member of SPP, and they actually have a lot of contracts with wind that they try to move into their region, which is the southeast part of the country, so.
What about PJM? Don't they want wind?
Oh, they
want
to build their own.
Do they have a wind resource?
I don't know. There have been a lot of national efforts, or a couple of national efforts over the years, to try to see what's the most efficient wind to move across the country. And the best wind is in SPP and MISO. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. But when you start talking about regulators and policymakers in the East, they really don't want the wind from SPP or MISO. They want to build their own, even though it's more expensive. It's just the way it is. So here are some of our current statistics. miles of territory, about 546,000 miles of service territory within our region. We cover, I think, 15 states. We've undergone a pretty big build-out since 2010, with the approval of our highway-byway cost allocation, which has enabled us to build, our members to build a lot of transmission that we have planned for. But again, as soon as you get a new line placed in service, it's absorbed. Any capacity there is absorbed quickly. We've got 96 members in our region. Our newest member, I think, well, I don't know if he's the newest now, but Walmart joined us last year, and that's our one large retail customer that we have in our membership. This is our members' portfolio, and as you can see, we're heavily gas, and coal makes up about 30%. Of the portfolio. Wind is at about 20%. I went back and looked to see, though, this was as of January of last year. And I looked to see what it was in 2015, because I know there's always interest in how things have changed. In 2015, gas made up about 43%. Coal made up 33%, and wind made up 14%. So that's kind of how those three big energy sources broke down back in 2015.
Can you say the gas and the coal again?
Yeah, in 2015, gas made up 43% of the portfolio. Coal made up 33%. And wind made up 14%.
So what?
It just gives you an idea how the portfolio has changed over the last 3 years. And I would have gone back farther, but I didn't have access mm-hmm. to the information.
Can you just provide a little insight into what Walmart is doing?
Well, Walmart's one of those big corporations. I'm assuming that they decided to join SPP because they have a lot of interest in going 100% renewable.
Mm-hmm.
And in the SPP region, you can do that. We're diverse enough in terms of geography.
And how do they, being a member, help influence that?
Influence the policy. Members, our members vote on all of our policies, and that's what we basically take to the board.
And their vote is the same as a Basin Electric, one vote, one member?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Yep. But they can also influence people, too. You know how that goes. So.
Not really familiar with that.
Let's see. And then this is actually the production of the members' resources. Gas comes in at about 19%. So 19% of the demand is met by gas. 46% is met by coal. And wind meets about 23% of the demand. In 2015, 22% of the demand was met by gas. And 55% was met by coal. So you've seen a 9% decrease in calls on coal. And then wind was meeting about 13.5% of the demand in 2015. So just, again, showing you how things are shifting. A lot of that has to do with the market. Coal has a hard time making it in our markets, but some of our members continue to self-commit coal units. For whatever reason, they may have contracts, coal contracts that they have to honor, you know, use it or lose it. But I would imagine over time you'll see that going down as well.
Sam, have you guys studied at what point you think that you get some operational challenges with a certain level of renewables? I know MISO is kind of looking at a 40% range where then the costs start to increase, the technological changes start to grow. Have you guys looked at that type of a thing system-wide? Not on any given moment, but as a, like, if this chart were to say 40% wind.
Yeah, our operators have done a very good job of managing whatever wind comes on the system and have not had any operational challenges as a result of that. You keep me honest, okay? But I don't know that they've done any study. They did a wind integration study, oh, gosh, 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Oh, the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first one we did was in 2008. I think we were sitting around 3,000 megawatts, 3 gigawatts of wind on the system, and we were trying to figure out what kind of challenges we would have over the next 10 years to get to 10 gig of wind. And so so you can see how fast it changed between 2008 and today. So we were in 2008, we were trying to figure out how we would ever get to 10 gig. Now we sit at almost 20. Right. And so it's really grew a lot faster than we ever thought. But like I said, I mean, I wouldn't say we've had some operational challenges. I think it's challenging for that amount of wind and variable resource. But our operators have done a good job of keeping everything on.
And so, we've had wind meet as much as high as like 60% of our demand.
Yeah.
On a single day.
Like in the middle of the night or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 20 gig, is that your total wind, or is that like when your total energy from wind?
So if you go back to that slide, I think that's marked 24, which is our capacity.
Okay, your capacity.
Yeah, so it's about 20%, and that's – I think it's just under – I think the last thing I saw the other day was just under 20 gig, around 19,800.
But it seems like – I mean, if I – you hear the guys talk back at the shop. They're anticipating another 5, 6, 7 gigs next year easy. So, to your point, I don't know that we've done any sort of study to analyze what's the maximum amount we can handle without having reliability issues. Instead, we just did a study a couple years ago that talked about, okay, we know we're never going to estimate how much wind is coming on board because we've undershot it every time. So what do we do to handle those wind events when they occur? And they did a study to see what kind of tools the operators would need to help them manage that. And we're in the process now of developing those tools and getting them in place. So.
Is gas generating following running in tandem, or is that not an issue at this point because there's enough capacity?
Yeah, it's not an issue right now. So,
you, in order to ensure that you're not having a problem in the future, you count on your utilities to make sure they have the correct amount of.
We tell them to keep, you know, what capacity to keep online, what to make available, just in case we need it. That's about it. You know, maybe we've been fortunate, Commissioner. I don't know that we haven't had any.
Well, I mean, you seem a little laissez-faire. It's the electric grid, so I'm sure that you're a little bit more concerned than you're letting on.
My attitude would be a lot different than my attitude as a non-operator, because those guys, you go out there and talk to them, and they say, we hate wind, because their day is just, they can never figure out what their day is going to look like. Even with all the forecast and the weather maps and everything that they've got, they still, it's just tough.
So wind in other parts of the country isn't as predictable as North Dakota?
Sure. But one of the things that I think does help, I mean, if you go back and you look at that map, we've got a pretty diverse geography that we cover. And if there are problems in one area, being that widespread, I think, really does help us out quite a bit.
Assuming you have the transmission.
But the transmission built out is pretty much complete right now. As I said earlier, we started a pretty big build-out in 2010 once we got the cost allocation issue figured out. Since then, we've been how much transmission have we invested? Is it like?
Just a little over $10
billion. Yeah.
Excuse me, a little over $10 billion since 2010.
And we're not anticipating much more, frankly. So. Other than things that might be required, facilities that might be required for units in the GI process, you know what I mean, to maintain reliability. But it's, you know, we'll see some things, but we're not anticipating any large build-outs from now on. Okay. And then these are just some North Dakota.
In that time frame, was there one or two projects that were, like, the big part of that? Or was it quite a few?
It was quite a few.
But was there just a small handful that made up, that were bigger than the others, or not so much?
Yeah. What was it? Hitchland?
I focus on myself.
No, I know. It's y'all's facility. I can't remember the name of it. It comes up out of Texas up into southern Kansas. It was a big project.
So our big projects have been this direction, okay? But initially, we were focused on west to east, and those are typically 345 projects to try to bind the region together, if you will. And then once you got those big projects built, there were like three or four of them. They were here, here, and here. Then everything else just kind of built off of that.
At one point, we were talking about building 765. Rather than 345, but the states didn't think that was probably the best idea, and so we have yet to do that. So, anyway, does that help?
Yeah.
All right. So these are just in North Dakota. We started doing this to share with our state regulators when we go out to visit them. This is like on page 14. And basically it tells you that North Dakota's generates more power than they can use. So y'all are exporting that somewhere. The market is taking care of it, I would imagine. And then that's y'all's fuel mix, from what we could tell. It's about 60% coal and 20% wind. And then this is, you know, the pie charts that I just talked about, the portfolio and then what's actually demanded. This is kind of y'all's pie chart for North Dakota is on the left. Just reflects the numbers that are on the previous slide. And then that's what's going on in the market on the right. Okay. And then there's the North Dakota projects. We've got a 345 that was built. That's to facilitate needs that we identified associated with Basin Co-op in the west. And then there's a project that has a notification to construct kind of up in the north central part of the state, too. And I don't know what that project's about, but
that's the yellow dotted line?
Yes, sir.
There's a couple of projects.
Is it two of them? Yeah, it is two of them. Okay. All right.
Victor, do you know what that is? Doesn't look like they're trying to keep it as short as possible.
Well, now these projects come out of our planning process. So I know when Basin, when the IS was being brought in, integrated into the SPP system, Basin had done some work. Wish Tom were here. Talk about what they thought they needed in terms of transmission projects. Well, we restudied that, and we didn't think that they needed all that. And since we're the ones that issued the notices to construct, that's the only thing that's been issued are those three projects right now. So, okay.
Three. I'm seeing two.
No, there's a.
You got the red one.
Yep.
It's in service, and then you've got this one and this one.
Oh, okay. I thought that was one.
They kind of look like they're.
They look like one. That's why I said those are. They are two. All right. So, that's all I've got on y'all's information. I'm going to hand it over to Ben to talk about the thing that seems to be consuming a lot of time of our members and our staff.
Yeah, so I was glad to hear that somebody thinks this was a well-named team, because I didn't think so. I didn't name it, but I didn't think so. So it's the Holistic Integrated Tariff Team. So it's, we refer to it as the HIT process.
Well, you lose the punch when you don't say HIT team.
I know, but I don't know.
That's why Randy likes it.
I was just glad they did. I was just glad SPP wasn't included on the front of it, so that would have made it worse.
That could have been the spit team.
Then. Well,
yeah, or that's exactly what he was thinking.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It could be
yeah. So. So what I'd like to point out is just, so I listed the people that are part of this team. It's a pretty diverse team. You know, it's made up of the different segments of our membership. It also includes two members of our RSC. As you guys probably may know, the RSC at SPP has some distinct authorities over cost allocation, resource adequacy, and FTRs in the market. And so since a lot of these things that we're dealing with cross those lines, it was important to have the proper RSC people attached to, and also have a liaison from our cost allocation working group, which is the working group that reports up to the COG made up of staff members. Victor's part of that team, actually.
Ben, I just want to interrupt for a second. Gene, my apologies. Because of flight scheduling and stuff, we moved this up from 1:30 to 1. And started, I probably should have thought of calling you.
That's okay.
Anyway.
Jay will catch me up.
I'll take responsibility for it, though, so I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay. So this is sort of depicts the tasks that the HIT team has in front of them. So what we're trying to do is get the proper alignment between our cost allocation principles, our market services, and our transmission planning processes. You know, three small, easy things to take up all at one time. So, and then we have kind of a catch-all fourth item, which has to do with our AQ study process, which is our load point additions. And so how do our members come to us and get approval to add load into the system? You know, we did something like this similar back in 2009. You know, things going on then were, you know, some of the states looking at RPS numbers and things like that. So what they had to do then was go through and figure out a new planning process, a new cost allocation process, which has enabled all of that wind growth or all of the transmission growth we've talked about starting in 2010. It was called the Synergistic Project Planning Team. Again, not a very good name on that one either. But they're the ones that came up with our current ITP planning process and our highway byway cost allocation. So what they did is they came up with a number of high-level recommendations and then sent those back through the stakeholder process. The ones on cost allocation went directly to the RSC and the cost allocation working group for them to really lay down the details of how those need to be put together and how they would be implemented. So they did that back in 2009. So again, this is a similar process. One thing that got added in now that our day two market is up and running, now we had to implement, or we also had to start looking at the market services that help support that. So really, you know, the big things that we're looking at are we building the right projects through our planning processes? Do we have the right people paying for those projects through our cost allocation principles? And do we have the right tools in place in our markets to incent the generators to do the things that we need them to do to support both of those other things? And so, again, pretty complex issues. I think we've learned a lot about really just, you know, how much all of these things are intertwined together. And so it's been really tough to sort of break up these three big parts and talk about them individually because they all impact the other ones so greatly. And so it's been a very, you know, so far a big education process. And just, I almost skip around my slides for a little bit. I would have taken that out of there. I forgot I left that. So if you look at our process we went through, we started back in April. And it was a year. This is scheduled to be a year-long process. So we're scheduled to bring some recommendations back to the board in April of 2019. And so really the first 4 months were just around staff education. So it was the staff getting together and providing education to the members of the HIT team to make sure they fully understood the issues, let them ask their questions and kind of get just a good education about that. The next 4 months, starting in August, what we is then start introducing the stakeholders. So the members into that and allowing them then to educate, continue that education process with the HIT team members and how the members see these same items, okay? And what were their thoughts and how do these things impact them? And so now that we've moved into December, we're now in the process of actually taking all of that together and staff has drafted a number of potential recommendation items just based on the conversations that we've heard from the HIT team. And we've now just started to introduce those to the HIT team to let them now start discussing those and saying, yeah, we agree that these are the things that we've talked about. These are the things that we think we want to make recommendations on. And so over the next, you know, through the end of March and into the first part of April, the team will then be taking those recommendations and continuing to work those into a final set of recommendations that they'll come back to the stakeholders. It'll go through the board and the RSC in April. So again, all those cost allocation items are the things having to do with resource adequacy potentially, or the things having to do with FTRs, financial transmission rights in the markets, will all come to the RSC. And then the other things will go on to the membership, some of the planning things.
Yeah, like and again, those are kind of high-level recommendations, if you will. And then the RSC and the CAWG will be responsible for coming up with the details
right. Around
cost allocation. So,
how many employees do you guys have?
About 600.
Mm-hmm. In multiple locations?
No, we're all located. We've got
two people that live in Houston.
Houston, right.
And then the other, everyone else is in Little Rock in our facility in Little Rock.
Okay.
Yeah. We've got a backup operations center north of a little community north of Little Rock, but everybody else is right there in Little Rock. So, Chairman, this is what you're going to be working on for the next year. Just give me a heads up, okay?
You know, another thing that sort of gets wound up in this is something that the RSC heard about in January last year, having to do with some cost allocation, perceived cost allocation inequities in some of the areas that have high wind penetration. I mean, we have areas in our footprint that may have four or five times the amount of wind on their system than they actually have load. right? And so it's how are those facilities being cost allocated, and what part of, you know, right now, because they're considered byway facilities in SPP, so those facilities between 100 kV and 300 kV, the local zone pays for 67% of those facilities, and then the other 33% is spread along throughout the region. You know, I won't say their complaint, but their issue was that, you know, we've got 4 or 5 times the amount of wind coming across our system than we have load, and we're paying for 70% of these projects, mm-hmm. right? There's something about this that's not right. And so, you know, that's part of what we'll be looking at. I know the cost allocation working group was directed by the RSC to go look at that issue. The HIT also has that issue on their agenda. We've been working with a couple of people from the COG, the cost allocation working group, as the HIT's worked on that as well. And so we're trying to get some traction around that and look at, you know, how do we continue to look at cost allocation on some of those byway projects, you know. And maybe it needs to be changed. The percentage is 50-50. Maybe it needs to flip 33-67 the other way. Maybe it might be different for, you know, areas that have higher wind penetrations or higher, maybe not even wind, but higher generation resources, like higher number of generation resources.
And so, it is a big dilemma in that, and tell me if you read this the same way, sadly, kind of a human instinct. You got a couple of pretty rural areas,
yeah,
where this is, and that's part of the reason why their load is so small.
Yeah.
And all this development goes in, and they can't afford to pay for it. And sadly, I sense a lot of other people within the organization hear it and go, yeah, let's move on to something that affects me.
Yeah,
And so it's hard for them. It's like the small county in your state in the legislature. It's hard to get traction.
Yeah. You know, if you look at the SPP footprint, most of the wind development has been out on the western edge of our footprint, right? So out in, you know, western Kansas, western Nebraska, western Oklahoma, and there's just not any load out there. I mean, all the load is more to the eastern side of our footprint. So when Sam showed that, you know, there's been a lot of focus on building those original projects from west to east, I mean, that's why, right? To get that renewable resource, that wind over there in the west, and get it to the east to where the load needs it. And so, yeah, we're going to be looking at a number of different things.
But Chairman, I'll call them out. I think Sunflower's done a good job of getting the attention of the board.
Yeah.
And the region. And
they're really working it, no doubt about it. But you guys, so. I've sort of sensed that some people look at it as a little bit blasé and just, well, it's their problem.
Well.
Yeah.
Sunflower Project, or is that a town?
Sunflower is a cooperative.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would
co-op in western Kansas.
Yeah. I would suggest the people that think it's blasé may not want any more costs allocated to them.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So.
Well, and, I mean, yeah. Couldn't they complain to FERC that it's not fair if they wanted to?
Well, they could if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But
if they can't get resolution.
Right. I would anticipate that they'll get a resolution through our process.
I hope so. It seems like something.
Is it, where was the 67? How was that picked?
As when the RSC developed the highway byway cost allocation back 10 years ago, that was just where they landed on where you'd make those.
So there's no cost benefit study or anything like
we
that?
We did some analysis back in the day, but you know, 10
it's
years
not relevant.
Ago,
and yeah.
Lots of things have changed in 10 years, right?
Who would have seen all this wind development?
We've seen all the wind development. We've implemented a day-two market. We've added the IS. We've added Nebraska. You know, so our footprint's grown. The resource mix has certainly changed. You know, so lots of things, which is part of the reason why the HIT team, or the main reasons why this HIT team has been put into place, to look at those issues and say, you know, we think that what we did in 2009 has succeeded. What do we need to do now?
Yeah, because 2009 led to the highway byway cost allocation and our integrated transmission planning process. So it was very beneficial for our members to go down that path. Now we're just at the point where we go, okay, our mix is different. Mm-hmm. Circumstances are different. We need to relook at this stuff, including probably, I would guess, the cost allocation at a high level. And probably one of those questions is going to be, Commissioner, is that split still equitable?
And are there times when it needs to be something different?
Yeah.
Right. You know, are there so just to go into maybe a... Yeah, it's just, you know, three easy things to get it, take a year out of your life to go.
Cost allocation. Nobody has strong feelings about that.
Right. So,
well, the good news in cost allocation in SPP is in the bailiwick of the Regional State Committee. So, and they've been very successful since 2004 working together to come up with different cost allocation methods. So, yeah.
You know, just to break those four areas down or a little more. There it is. You know, when we talk about, you know, the first area of dealing with transmission planning and some of the planning principles, you know, we're looking at our resource adequacy processes and do there need to be any changes to resource adequacy? Do we leave them the way they are? You know, in our economic planning processes, do there need to be different things that we look at, again, to make sure that we're focusing on and building the right projects? We're talking in GI processes, you know, there's a couple products that we all have based on FERC rules, you know, these energy products and network products, ERIS and NRIS, and, you know, are we looking at those products correctly? Are we valuing them correctly? The people that choose a network method of interconnection, you know, it costs more money to do that, yet at the end of the day, they each have the same access to the actual market. So how do we provide more value in that network product? Congestion hedging, you know, again, we put in our market in 2014. You know, we have these financial transmission rights and auction revenue rights tools. You know, now that we've got 3 or 4 years behind us, you know, are we getting the expected results out of those? Are those products working the way we expected them to work? Are the utilities that are utilizing them getting the value out of them they should be? Or is there something we need to do to enhance those?
If there are going to be changes, and I assume there will be at least recommended changes, at some point, Chairman, you're looking at everything under 1B. You're looking at under 1A, resource adequacy and congestion hedging.
Yeah, there'll be a number of things. Local planning criteria, you know, in our local zones, you know, do they within the zones, like the multi-owner zones, do they all have similar or the same local planning criteria? So they're doing the same things inside the zone and sharing those costs because they're all sharing those costs. And so, you know, as far as cost allocation, you know, we're talking about things like potentially looking at generation injection charges. You know, right now the wind and other generators don't pay anything to inject energy onto the system. Yet those transmission owners are getting hit with all these transmission costs. So they're looking at, you know, we're looking at a way, should the generators be paying a part of that, right?
And that was a question that came up back in 2009, too.
Right.
And the decision was made at that time, no, they didn't need to pay a separate charge. But, again, like Ben said, we're rethinking that.
Yeah. Or at least discussing it, right? And all of these things are very draft. These recommendations that have been that are being floated around right now, and they're posted out there in on the HIT webpage. They're very draft. You know, just now starting to really discuss how those recommendations will be termed, but and they may change, and there may be different things end up being different than what's out there today. But we're talking also about consolidation of transmission zones. So, you know. We have 817, I think, small little transmission zones throughout the footprint. You know, maybe if on the new transmission, so the things that we direct, maybe we make those zones bigger so the impacts of those, some of those costs aren't as great to some of the smaller entities. And we're talking about how that could work. And, you know, you may have to transition to it over time because obviously there would be some immediate cost shift. So it may be a thing that over the next 5 years we transition to these larger zones. Okay.
Were those 17 zones, are they kind of geographic in nature that they got carved out in that way? Or, like, are we a zone because we came in at a different time than others? Or how did this come to be?
They're a product of history.
Yeah, so... So they're a product of, like, when people came to SPP and put their facilities underneath our tariff, each time they did that, each utility that had their own facilities became sort of their own zone.
Okay.
Okay. Now, UMZ is a little bit different. Our UMZ zone, which is Heartland Basin, WAPA, so that would be you all are part of that. So that all came in as one time, at one time. So yeah, and it's, you know, so there's really, look at it, you know, what are the legacy systems? What are the systems that got brought in when they came in versus what are the new facilities that got planned for and directed by SPP? The legacy things, I don't know that we can really get in the middle of that and start switching around how those things work. But it's certainly the new facilities that get planned for by SPP that we're talking about consolidation of some of those zones. Today the zones are the same, but they don't have to be for any specific reason. We just had never had a reason to think about splitting those two up between the legacy and the new. So we're looking at that. We're looking at attachment Z2, which I'm sure you guys maybe have heard of our Z2 process and how sponsored projects are costs are reallocated back to them as people use those systems. You know, it's been one of those things that have gone on at SPP for a number of years. Truthfully, it's a very difficult process that no one seems to be very happy with. It's very hard to predict what the outcome's going to be of those. And the methodology that ultimately got implemented is very, very difficult and nearly impossible for somebody to unwind and forecast where they think they're going to end up being. And so there's a lot of, there's a lot – been numerous filings at FERC protesting our Z2 process, and so, you know, one of the things that we'll continue to try to work on is how do we make that simpler and easier and more transparent for the people that are involved in it. So as we go over and look at the blue squares, so this is where we'll be taking a look at the market, and so we'll be looking at things in our market about ramping products and maybe a multiple day unit commitment and some fast start resource functionality or additional functionality in our market, working with our market working group. We're going to be looking at things around the NERC essential reliability services and make sure that we have those adequately taken care of in our market and that they're being compensated correctly. And what other, you know, new products that the market needs, you know, again, to help incent our generators to do the things we need them to do to support the rest of the things going on in SPP. And then out in the yellow box, the far box, again, that's sort of it originated as kind of a catch-all. And what it's evolved to is just looking at our attachment AQ study process, which again is load growth, load point additions. And so, you know, usually when our members are going out and trying to add load points, a lot of times they're competing with other utilities for those things, for maybe data centers or whatever that's going on out there. And so we're looking at how we can become more nimble and flexible and getting an answer back to our utility so they can be more competitive and not be waiting around for us to get them an answer. And so I know load growth is obviously very important. Our load is not growing as fast as it once was, and so very much a high focus of this group, again, is to figure out how do we bring on additional load. And we're not saying grow the footprint. We're just saying how do we bring additional load into the footprint we already have. So talked about that. So, again, what's our next step? So we have multiple day meetings scheduled out through middle of April. We have met a lot this year. And so we'll continue to work down these draft recommendations. We're reaching out to stakeholders now to see if they have additional recommendations that they want to have considered as in front of the HIT team. The HIT members will probably bring up some other ones of their own. And, you know, so over the next, you know, couple months, we'll be working those down into, you know, my guess is we'll end up with 10 or 12 recommendations total that'll come back out to the RSC and the board in April. Then those things get injected into the stakeholder process. We have a long, exhausting stakeholder process too. So that'll take up a lot of work next year. Getting this finalized and then turning around and getting the recommendations implemented in the stakeholder process to figure out ultimately where we end up taking some of these important issues. So.
What are you guys doing about or contemplating with distributed generation? Are you working on that at all, or your members?
We really distributed generation so far has not been an issue within SPP. Part of that's because on the demand response side, A lot of that resides with the jurisdiction of the state commissions. We're not seeing, you know, the graph that MISO showed today where their capacity is basically shrinking, and the concern about the two intersecting, that what their reserves, required reserves are, the capacity. We're not seeing that yet. We haven't seen a lot of retirements. Will we? I anticipate that we will, but we just haven't seen that yet. And so DERs just hasn't been a thing for us to have to focus on at this point. It will at some point, Commissioner, but it just hasn't at this point. I think the last time I looked at how much capacity we were at like 25%, and our requirements were like 12. That's a lot of, that's a margin. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's just outside of the capacity, just the whole challenges that distributed generation creates for system operators that, you know, makes it, you know, and there's some jurisdictional issues with the utilities too that it's not something that's going to be solved overnight.
And on the storage side, you know, everybody's made their filings, right, with FERC. Made them last week, I think, maybe the week before. And waiting to see what FERC says. I know within SPP, we took a very minimalist approach. We looked at what the FERC said you had to do, and we did that. And we didn't really go beyond that. So we'll just see how that develops. I did note that we have some storage that's finally being developed in our region, but it's only around 25 to 3,000 megawatts. So.
And what about electric vehicles? Is that an issue that's kind of surfacing in any of your states?
Mm-mm, not really. You see little pockets of it. Kind of an interesting aside, we've got a bunch of folks that have electric vehicles at SPP, and so they were running basically extension cords out to their car when they would park them every day, and which I thought was funny. But anyway, the company's decided to go ahead and designate kind of a bay, if you will, kind of as a filling station for these vehicles. And I don't, so
do
then the question, huh?
Do they charge for it?
Then the question becomes, are you going to charge them to charge their cars or not? And, you know, some of us that don't drive electric vehicles say, well, if they don't, then they need to pick up our gas. So we'll see how that all works out.
Well, then there's questions of can you
resell
it? I mean, is that reselling?
Yeah. And it's a good question. And we're probably seeing pockets, you know, that's a small thing, but you're not seeing anything very big within our region at all that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the Midwest, right?
Yeah, but you've got some warm climate states that electric vehicles might work well in. So
maybe.
What are your biggest cities? What big
Oklahoma
urban areas?
City, Kansas City, Omaha.
Okay. Yeah, so they're...
Little Rock's not even in our region.
Midwest.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah. You could move the whole thing up to North Dakota if you
want. We've talked about moving it.
Yeah.
You do like coming here, right?
Do I? I grew up in northern Wisconsin. I've seen all the winter I ever came. I'm not.
So I'm going to move over to the recent effort by the SPP RSC and the OMS. They're what they're calling their liaison committee to help MISO and SPP work through the SEAMS issues. So these are the goals that were laid out by this committee. They were looking to try to come up with some improvements in different areas with both SPP and MISO. They were looking to see if they could somehow increase the benefits in both markets by improving kind of market-based transactions between the SEAMS and the operations between the SEAMS. Look at beneficial regional and interregional projects on the planning side, and those would be similar to the projects that we have already been identifying over the years in our coordinated system plans. And then support the interconnection on a timely basis of new resources. And then improve inter-RTO relations just under the state effort. Before I kind of go any farther, I want to say that I really do appreciate that the states have stepped up and decided that they wanted to see if they could help us work through issues. I also want to be real clear that in my view, this is an RSC and OMS effort. It's not my effort. It's not MISO's effort. We're here to help you guys however we can help you. But and I want you to succeed. But y'all have had, that I know of, you've had two public meetings. The most recent one was in Orlando. So this is what the scene looks like. Everybody's seen this map, and those are the list of the states on each side. okay. And y'all know that the hash marks means those areas that served by both of us, right? These are the liaison committee members. Again, thank you, Commissioner, for stepping up. So OMS representatives are led by Commissioner Daniel Hall from Missouri. And then working with him from OMS are Lambert Boissier from Louisiana, Commissioner Fedorchuk, and then Commissioner Sugar from Minnesota. On the RSC side, you've got Chairman Albrecht, who is the lead for the RSC, and then Christy Fegan from South Dakota, Kim O'Gwen from Arkansas, and D.M. Walker from Texas. So I think it's a pretty good mix geographically in terms of representatives from both regions. Then you've got Nick Wagner, who is calling himself the ex officio member from Iowa.
RSC doesn't allow any men on that team.
I guess not. He was the MISO person until he became a big shot.
Yeah, exactly. Glad you said that. So our MISO and SPP have had a joint operating agreement since 2004 as part of the requirements for when we were granted RTO status to come up with a JOA with MISO. It's been approved by FERC, and it's been amended a number of times, and those amendments were approved by FERC. Part of that process requires us to do what I mentioned just a minute ago, which is a coordinated system plan. And part of that plan, we evaluate on an interregional basis, if you will, possible economic reliability or public policy transmission projects. We also determine whether or not there's a need to do a study, interregional study. Part of the problems, we've gone through this process twice. In 2014 and 2016 and did a interregional plan. And there were projects that came out of each of those studies. But what we had to do was then take them back to our regional processes to get approval there. And that's where nothing's happened. Okay? We would have been scheduled to do one in 2018, but instead of doing that, the advisory group said, time out. Why don't we look and see if we can improve the process in order to maybe have a higher likelihood of seeing some projects come out of the interregional process, which I think is probably a good thing because these studies are expensive to do. And at the end of the day, ratepayers are going to pick up the tab for those things. So we did work with MISO and come up with a number of changes. And that's the kind of the second big bullet there. what we've agreed to do is kind of get rid of the what's called the triple hurdle. That's the first hurdle is the interregional hurdle, and then the other two hurdles are each regional. Okay, so now rather than having an interregional study, we will work together and study projects in our regional process that would otherwise be looked at in an interregional process. We also, there was a project cost floor of $5 million, and we removed that, the thinking being that there are probably some good projects that will cost less than $5 million that we could probably get done. And then standardize how to allocate the cost of the interregional projects between MISO and SPP. It's just a lot more straightforward. We tried to simplify the process is kind of my take on that. And some of the other challenges that we've had with SAMES is contract path capacity sharing. We both have different interpretations of the Section 5.2 of our joint operating agreement, same words, but we just interpret them differently. They're also an issue of our other appropriate charges right now for unreserved usage or not. I know I was on a panel a couple weeks ago in Des Moines, and Commissioner Sugar asked me, he made the point that, and I may get this wrong, Allison, so jump in, but I think his point was, in MISO, we're really focused on the most efficient use of the facilities that we have. And so if there's a facility out there, simplistic, that nobody's using, then somebody else should be able to use it, kind of for free is my take. And my response to the commissioner was, I understand. Our members insist that if you use my stuff, you pay for my stuff. It's just that simple. And it's not an efficiency issue on our side. So just be aware of that if you hadn't heard that. So moving forward, I think we've got a meeting on the 20th with the MISO stakeholders and the SPP stakeholders to go through these three changes that I just mentioned. Probably we'll show them the changes in wording to the JOA at that time. But we are planning to make the filing reflecting those changes at FERC probably, I would imagine, February of next year. So we're going to try to get this done fairly quickly.
Will it be joint filing?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm already working on setting up pre-filing meetings that we'll go in jointly and meet with FERC staff. So,
great.
Yeah. I mean, it's good news. If you're mm-hmm. interested in what's going on the seams, it's a good thing, I think. Let's see. And again, we continue to work with MISO on how to improve the interregional planning process. Kind of an increased reliance between the operations and planning staff within each RTO. I don't know what MISO's done historically. I was surprised, though, when I went to work at SPP and realized that our planners didn't really talk to our operators about what they might need, and so they're doing a much better job of informing each other of what's going on within their respective shops, and I anticipate we'll see more and more of that because you want to plan for the projects that the operators need to have, right? And then we're looking at possible. Y'all have seen presentations on the market-to-market stuff, right? And how the payments flow from SPP to MISO and vice versa. We're starting to talk about, is there a possibility that there are transmission alternatives to those payments? For example, if you're making $20 million a payment every year, say we're making it to MISO, but it happens every year, mm-hmm. Is there a transmission fix that's a cheaper right. alternative for customers or not? So we'll see. That's kind of where we're heading right now, though.
Can I ask a question about seams? I should have asked MISO this as well, but I've heard a lot about the problems on the south side, the south end of MISO and SPP, the challenges. But I haven't heard a lot lately about seams issues in North Dakota. Are there any?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, we had some challenges, as I recall, back when we were integrating the IS, right?
Yep.
And that's just the way our tariff's different than MISO's tariff. And I know Brian Calk at the time was talking to me about, well, could we change the tariff? And my response, and I'm not being smart, is we can change it, but it has to go through the membership. And if the members are affected by those changes, you're going to see a lot of pulling and tugging each direction. But I haven't heard of any kind of seams issues since then. Darcy?
No, we do see seams issues, and I think some of those are not as visible as the north-south flow and what it means in the joint operating agreement. There's a a lot of conversation, I think, even at the RC level that doesn't happen in between MISO and SPP. And so we're frequently getting called in between on asking for limits on facilities, or we've had a situation here was back in September, I think. We actually had an SOL exceedance over one of our facilities because the two RSCs didn't communicate and didn't understand what was going on.
What's an RSC in this context?
Well, the reliability coordinator.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the reliability coordinator is overseeing that because of this overlaying.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of a lack of communication. So they end up calling us, and we just don't understand the full picture. You get questions. It's like, well, what do you have a reading on this line? And a reading on this line. And it's like, what are you asking for? What are you trying to get at? Yet it's one of these things. It's so, I think there's a complexity of the interconnection out there folks haven't understood.
Yeah.
And I think we've gotten into a number of, even early on, not so much lately, early on, scheduling of transmission outages that Wappan Basin never would have taken because they knew the operational impacts were allowed to happen, you know, that ended up with a lot of market-to-market charges.
Yeah.
Just because of the lack of understanding.
Have those been kind of sorted out now, Darcy, in your sense? Or, cause the
they still happen, but it more is an impact on the SPP side than it is on ours. But we do see operational impacts, you know, particularly in the shoulders that end up impacting us. But
yeah.
I know we've got more questions with MISO on their tariff, how they interpret the scene that we don't agree with more so than how SPP does. But I know it doesn't get a lot of focus because it's not populated. And there aren't as many dollars probably at issue on this
part
of the
but if it's, I mean, I'm certainly interested if it's costing customers money that could be prevented or if there's a cheaper solution.
Sometimes we get paid in a positive method almost.
Well, then it's just perfect the way it is.
You know, one of the things, there's been a lot of talk about what happened in January down south. This past year, mm-hmm. or this year, and I'm not going to go there other than to say, as a result of that event, there was a recognition that there was an increased need for us to have a better procedures in place to help us deal with a future event, because there was going to be a future event. And we were able to do that with MISO and the other joint parties, which is like Southern Company and TVA and AECI. Why do I bring that up? Because in September we had a similar event, and but it was not an issue because we had the proper procedures in place. The operators had clarity about what they were supposed to do and kind of what they were supposed to follow. And, you know, Darcy, I'm not an operator by any means. I'm not an engineer either. But it seems like there might be a place for some of those process improvements up here. So, and I'll take that back. Have you? I'll talk to you afterwards.
Sure.
How about Stacy?
You know, I think Darcy did a nice job of teeing out some of the issues. I think there's probably still just some growing pains of RTO to RTO communication and TO 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 communication, and I think we're working through those at the locations that you mentioned. And then just some of the differences we see on the scene with the MISO tariff and the SPP tariff, whether that's the unreserved use issue.
Yep.
Sure. And reach out to others as we think we can work together on solving them. So that, yeah, they're not the big north-south.
Right. And I know in one of our coordinated system plans there was a project that was identified on the interregional side, either in, I can't remember now if it was North Dakota or South Dakota.
The XL project?
I think. Is that South Dakota?
Yeah.
But again, it didn't make it through the regional process. And there are good reasons why those projects don't make it through the regional process. You know, they can come up with a regional project that's cheaper and does more for them than the interregional project. But, I do think as I'll take back the comments that I heard about communications, what I was hearing, and talk to our ops. And I'm getting exposed to a lot more of the conversations with the operators because I've been pretty heavily involved in the West with our effort to stand up the provision of reliability coordination services out there. You know, we're going to be in that business this time next year in parts of the West. It's not an area that, I mean, I'm an old regulator, and it's not something that was ever in my wheelhouse. You know, we had utilities, public utilities, that were rate of return regulated, and they had a monopoly service territory, and in exchange, they made sure the lights stayed on. And I didn't care how they did it. They just do it, right? Well, trying to stand something new like that out in the West has been interesting to watch, given my background. So I was going to talk to y'all about that today, but I took those slides out, said, nope, didn't want to take y'all's time up dealing with that. So anyway, that's kind of where we're at right now. This is kind of our update.
But for the record, that is moving forward to become the reliability coordinator over a pretty good part of what was going to be that Mountain West
initiative. It is. It's Mountain West. It's three of the four WAPA areas in the West. It's so it's part of Arizona, part of New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, a little bit of Utah. And so I've been doing a lot of work with outreach to the state commissioners out there.
So you're not, they're not being part of the SPP system, but you'll be the, what does that mean?
So what we're doing is we're providing the service under contract to those companies.
And what is the service? The service is
it's what? Reliability coordination services. It's just to make sure that.
So you analyze what they're doing?
We look at what they're doing, make sure that there aren't any reliability problems on within our region, and anything that's going on within our region that we're providing the service to isn't affecting in a negative way the areas at CAISO. Will be providing services to, or BC Hydro, or whoever else it is.
There was one entity in the West that did RC services everywhere. For the entire West. They're going. They have announced that they're shutting down, and so it's forced everybody in the West to now go. You're required to have a reliability coordinator, so it's forced them to go find reliability coordination services somewhere. Yeah. Cal ISO is picking up the majority of the West, and then we sort of have that Intermountain area.
Yeah. That's what the Intermountain, part of the Rockies.
Yeah.
And
you just want an excuse to go to Denver in the winter, didn't you, sir?
Oh, yeah, and Montana in the winter.
Yeah.
You're not a skier, are you?
No, I'm not. I like beaches.
You should be. You'll like it a lot more.
But, you know, so what's happened, commissioners, is in a very short period of time, you know, we went from trying to expand the RTO out into the West to the Mountain West region, right? That ended in when PSCo announced that they were pulling out of that effort back in April, right? Within 2 months, Peak said, we're shutting down. So everybody kind of shifted. I know internally we shifted all of our efforts from trying to figure out what it looks like to expand the RTO footprint in the West and provide market services to saying, hold on. We need to get an RC stood up on the West more than anything else because people had been coming to us in the West asking us to provide those services to them for whatever reason. And that's what we're doing. So the cutover to new RC providers in the West is going to take place over like four different dates next year. I think the first one's in June, the second one's in September, the third one's like in October, and then we're in December. And Peak has told us on December the 3rd, when we take over, they're turning out the lights. So.
Their lights, not the West lights. Hopefully.
Probably not a good phrase to use in this business, is it, Sam?
So, and we've been, you know, and that makes everybody nervous because, like Ben said, there had been one RC in the West for a number of years. And the West is different, and we're trying to get our operators up to speed so that they're trained and ready to handle that difference by next December. So anyway, I wasn't going to talk about RC, and I wound up talking about it anyway. I apologize.
Well, we kind of forced you to, so.
Anything else going on that y'all want to hear from us about that you know of?
Anything else anyone wants clarified, or we'll let you make sure you get on your flight.
What else should we be asking about?
I already talked about it.
Yeah, no, but what have we not heard that you are thinking about a lot with SPP?
Okay, with that.
And you know what you volunteered for.
What did I volunteer for?
The liaison committee work.
Oh, well, yeah.
I was just
not today I didn't volunteer.
Right. I was just going to say that the liaison committee published a document yesterday. I think it was out on the OMS website and our website as well. It's looking for stakeholder feedback on what that committee's been doing. So that's out there as well.
I haven't read it. Is there anything we need to holler at Julie about?
No.
It's very controversial.
Okay, we will wrap this up then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Don't know if I said that to the MISO folks this morning, but thank you as well for being here. And
thanks for accommodating us too.
Yeah,
you bet.
And it's good to have the utilities here too. Appreciate you guys poking in.